Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
And time perhaps to shift our conversation to something that will leave us a lot more intrigued and enlightened, especially if you're someone who just likes to be aware of how brands are performing, whether you choose to indulge in the contents or not. This time we're talking about the world's top most valuable brands and strongest alcoholic drink brands that do exist. You might be asking, well, why does this matter? Well, if there's anything we need to be mindful of is that brands and companies will share stories with us. We have an experience with them. And that does not only translate into the awareness that we as consumers have of them, but a heightened level of awareness also might even lead to a heightened level of product use. And that in itself translates into growth and the value of these particular brands. Tonight, we thought we'd reflect on this 2024 Brand Finance Africa 200 report, and one that actually zones into some of the more popular and most valuable brands, specifically when it comes to alcoholic drinks. Jeremy Sampson, Chairman of Brand Finance Africa, joins us this evening. Mr. Sampson, always a pleasure. Welcome to Kaya Biz.
Oh, we are formal, aren't we, Gugu? Good to be with you again.
So lovely to speak to you, Jeremy. And I guess we do need to contextualize this, right? When I shared the story with my colleagues earlier on the drive show, they said, brands, beer, vodka, lager, why does this even matter? And help us contextualize why this research really underpins not only the growth of businesses and brands, but the impact on us as consumers.
Well, I don't know how long we've got tonight, but to start with, often the brand is the most valuable asset of a company. Now, try and digest that to start with. But also today, everything is brandable. I think I said to you last time, you are a brand as a person. South Africa is a brand. Botswana is a brand, basking in the success of the Olympics. So everything is brandable, and they have values. And brands are bought and sold for lots and lots of money. So that's where brands value. Brands are important. And you know that if some organization has a strong brand, people will go out and buy that brand. There's a consistency. There's a loyalty. Now, you have a favorite, perhaps cereal, perfume, or cosmetic or whatever, and you'll keep on following that very often. People are sometimes a little bit promiscuous. They'll move around. But sometimes you go into a shop, they haven't got your brand. Will you walk out and go somewhere else until you find your brand? So brands today, you know, if we had this conversation perhaps 20, 30 years ago, people would say, well, what's a brand? Whereas today, everyone's talking about brands and everything. Everything is brandable.
Yep, definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that because then it helps us contextualize and understand how we even interact with the brands that we thoroughly enjoy. And you're quite right. I have turned back from a few stores if I found that a particular brand or an item I love isn't actually there. And this is interesting because we're going to take a look specifically at alcoholic brands and beverages specific to the African continent, but also globally. Let's contextualize this because when one thinks of alcohol, one always thinks of, I guess, what people are comfortable with in terms of the environment, the countries, or their places of origin.
Very true. And I don't want to do a commercial, but I would say to your listeners, if you go onto brand channel, brandfinance.com, so brandfinance.com, the report is there covering beer and spirits. It's a 60-page report. And there's a third part coming out on Friday, which is relating to wine. But if we go back to the beer and spirits, you're quite right. Basically, Brand Finance been around best part of 30 years in 25 countries, and everything we do is relating to international standards. There's 10667, which is financial value, and 20671, which is the brand equity of a brand. So we're working to international standards, and that's where when we do a ranking like this, and the top brand comes out as Corona, Corona Light. Basically, anything that we do in Africa and specifically in South Africa is based on global best practice. And this is where often people say, oh, why are we so low down the rankings? Sometimes it's because the value is so small. Mm-hmm. Now, to give you an example, Corona Light is worth $10 billion. Castle, which is South Africa and Africa's biggest beer brand, is worth just around about 600 million. So in other words, it's much, much smaller. And often some of the brand value, of course, comes from scale, that Castle isn't available in that many countries. But Corona Light is available around the world.
Mm-hmm. And specifically looking at the report focused on beer, what's intriguing is that it almost seems as though there's always a local trend and theme to it. Castle, you mentioned, dominates in South Africa. And I do see Kenya has Tusker that's actually been growing in that particular market.
Very true. In fact, when you mentioned the Africa Top 200 brands, which we brought out in end of May, I think it was, round about Africa Day. And if you look through that, you'll find there are 16 beer brands listed, and that covers, I think it's six or seven countries. But you're quite right. Now, we start with Castle, Carling and Hansa in South Africa, but if you have lots of Nigerian listeners tonight, they'd be very excited to hear that Nigeria is doing incredibly well. Now, when you have Senator Lager and things like that, 33 Export, Hero. You can go to Ethiopia, and they have a couple of brands. Kenya, as you say, has got Tusker, although it is interesting, as we said before, that Tusker isn't owned in Kenya, nor is Castle owned in South Africa, when you think of it. It's owned by the Belgians. Mm. And Diageo, the English company, owns Tusker. So this is where often brands keep their heritage, project themselves as the local brand, but their parentage is sometimes many thousands of miles away.
100%. Does this influence the quality, the value, the equity in a brand? Foreign ownership may be assisting to diversify the markets that it can penetrate?
Excellent question. You've got to make me think on that. No, SA Breweries, remember, was bought out by AB InBev, which is the Belgian company. So AB InBev, in buying up SAB, made sure that Castle maintained its roots, maintained its heritage. After all, it's what now, I don't know, 110, 120 years old. And so this is where they don't want to dilute the equity in the brand, and they keep it that way. Though we haven't mentioned Heineken. Heineken, of course, bought out Distell, 3 years or so ago.
Yes.
So when we drink a Savannah or an Amarula or brands like that, which are now owned by Heineken, but as Distell, they're very South African. And so they maintain, again, that heritage. And this is where some people, you know, are very, very patriotic. Others don't care a damn. You know, they'll go into their local tavern and whatever, ask for a beer. Whereas a lot of people say, no, I want a Castle or I want a Carling or whatever. And that's where it comes down to the power of the brand.
This is so interesting, Jeremy. My you're tickling my brain cells here, because as I look at the top three brands when it comes to beer, Budweiser at number three, Heineken at number two, Corona at number one, I'm realizing that these are particular beer brands, perhaps other than Budweiser, that don't necessarily share a story about origin and a location or a culture, but actually speak to a lifestyle, especially in terms of the likes of Corona, you know, life in the sunset, golden moments. It speaks to an atmosphere that can be created almost anywhere in the world. Does that play an influence at all in terms of brand value?
Well, absolutely. Now you're touching on the emotional side of a brand, and that's very, very important to know. Do you feel proud if you're sitting there drinking a Castle? Do you like to be associated with it? If you're drinking spirits, what would you have on the table? A Hennessy or a Johnny Walker? And if it's champagne, is it going to be Moët and Chandon or whatever? And this is where brands say a lot about us, the company we keep in branding terms. But as you say, it also gets very emotional. Now, of course, when you actually look at Corona Light, the really big acceleration, as it were, they've had this year is that they were the sponsor of the Paris Olympics. And so that has added to the whole thing. I have to say that I hadn't drunk a Corona until about 2 weeks ago when I was actually in my local alcoholic beverage shop. And I noticed there was a big display by the till of Corona. And I thought, they're a sponsor. Let's take a six-pack and try and take them home and see what I think. So an impulse buy, but it was actually very, very good. And this is where you get down to the importance of brands communicating, but making sure that it's available when you think of it. So here is Corona, you know, basically part of AB InBev, but it's available around the world so that anyone watching the Olympics and seeing Corona Light and Corona Extra, when they're actually out shopping and they see it, it actually just gives them a jog, and I'm sure sales will have gone up very nicely the last couple of weeks.
Definitely. This almost takes us back, as you've mentioned before, the art of storytelling and how brands are really here to build an experience and touch on our emotions. Then it is just about us remembering their name, though that is a consequence of the marketing and branding efforts. I guess share a few learnings that we can actually learn and be inspired by from these big brands that perhaps entrepreneurs and individuals here at home can learn.
Absolutely. And this is where, when you talk of the storytelling, you talk of the values, you know, this is where there are key values that one sometimes works to. You always want trust and integrity. That's a given. You want it to be authentic. And this is where you can build a lovely story, as Castle has done over the years. I remember, in fact, working with SAB, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, mm-hmm. when the time came to decide, well, are we going to support Lion as well as Castle? Both of them were coming up to about 100 years old. And in the end, Lion was waning. It wasn't so popular, whereas Castle was going strongly. And they decided to put their weight behind the Castle brand. And Lion, as we know, then withered and died and disappeared. I remember in the townships, if you took a Lion, big bottle as they were in those days, I think they were liter bottles, mm-hmm. turned it upside down, and everyone knew it was a number 17, and that was a very, very powerful way of marketing Lion at the time. But Castle came through as the main brand in the end.
Oh, wow. This is so interesting. Jeremy, this is why I just love talking to you. We listen, we learn, and gain a better perspective when it comes to brands that we interact with and what it is about these brands that really pull at our heartstrings that also influence our spending. So it's a full circle moment, I guess, in terms of the economics of understanding brands, right?
I think it is. We haven't touched on things like those sustainability and community and giving back to the communities. And I think that is increasingly coming through to the fore. As we know with ESG, it's much more on people's minds. Mm-hmm. Might depend a little bit on your culture or your generation positioning, as it were. I know the Gen Zs are much more conscious of environmental issues. And this, again, is where Castle have been very, very clever in the last year. They had their campaign for Bread of the Nation, which was using byproducts from producing beer, but they were able to recycle it, if that's the right term, into making it into a form of bread and giving it to local communities in need. So this is a very good example of giving back to the community and making sure that you're not just there selling the beer, you're not just there for the beer, although that might sound a bit strange, but you're there for the long run for the community and looking after people.
Definitely. Such a pleasure speaking to you as always, Jeremy. Really appreciate your time, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. That's Jeremy Sampson, chairman of Brand Finance Africa, but also a clear legend, juggernaut when it comes to understanding the world of brands and marketing and storytelling. Very intriguing, as we've learned, that when it comes to brands, hopefully you too can reflect on what it is that pulls you towards a particular brand within a particular product category. You know, is it the story? Is it the culture? Is it just growing up, having a sense of familiarity with it, or trying to experience the emotion that it emits within you internally? Interesting times, right? Well, stay with us in a moment. We'll be talking all things Ekasinomics and hearing from our next entrepreneur who himself has built a phenomenal brand called the Unorthodox Chef, but someone who has certainly made sure that the home meals that are so traditional in South Africa now no longer take hours, but literally available within arms.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.